Vinyl Rats, a show for and about the love of music. I'm Jake.
I'm Charlie.
And we're coming at you every Tuesday morning with brand new episodes on classics, brand new releases, and the most exciting acts coming from our neck of the woods, the Pacific Northwest. For those unaware of our format, we spend hours upon hours digging through our extensive music collection to share an album we think the other would love as much as we do, and then we sit down and talk about it. So without further ado, we hope you're having a good day, and we're glad to have you on our musical journey. Let's start the show.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Pushing through.
It's funny, I think we picked two super different albums this time. But I did, mine is in the Pacific Northwest for the first time.
Do you want to start with that?
I feel like we should start with this one because could two be completely objective? I think it's, as much as you can be with music, I think it's the worst out of the two.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think Motomami is, like, a lot more innovative than this one is. I think if you listen to, like, the rest of the Dandy Warhols, like, this album is just kind of, like, makes sense. It's not, like, anything super special, but I really love it.
Yeah, I think did it come out in the early 2000s, or?
Yeah, it's one of their earlier ones.
And, like, wasn't huge, the internet wasn't huge at the time.
No.
So I do think it's the way it blends genres is important. Like, I could see people being inspired by them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's, especially for its time, a very interesting take in rock music and a really good showcase of what Portland is like. If you've, like, been there a lot, my grandparents live there, my dad is from there, so I've been there, like, a good amount of times, and I think, like, this is the only band I've ever heard where I'm like, I could not imagine them being from anywhere else. I think I like it, and the two albums that I've picked recently, I think, follow in a similar trend of, like, they make a lot of sense from the setting. Like, Wiki's Half God makes a ton of sense in Brooklyn. This album makes a ton of sense in Portland. So with that, I can kind of get into it a little bit. The Dandy Warhols are, as I said, a band from Portland. They were formed with two people originally, the lead singer and guitarist, also just a really eccentric, very odd person. His name is Courtney Taylor Taylor, which fits so perfectly because it sounds like a pop star name, and that's how he kind of, like, that's how he kind of treats himself. He has a very large aura in the band, a very large presence. And Peter Holmstrom, which is a guy with an afro, who's a very good guitarist, a white guy with an afro. And then they picked up Zia McCobb and Eric Hedford, Zia McCobb on keyboard, which is a huge part of their music and a huge part of them kind of finding this electronic side to the music that they were making. And that comes kind of later in the discography. Eric Hedford, also good, but I don't know. The drums on every Dandy Warhols album aren't, like, anything crazy, so not a lot to say. But their first album, 1997, the Dandy Warhols Come Down. They first pitched this to Capitol Records. Capitol Records hated it and sent it back because it didn't have a hit on it. Later, they would go on to add the song Not If You Were the Last Junkie on Earth, which is a very ironic song about heroin use, and also speaks to their relationship with the band, the Brian Jonestown Massacre, who's also from Portland, and kind of had a cool ascent going until the lead singer, who I cannot remember the name of, got really addicted to heroin. So it's kind of a play on that, and if you ever want to watch the documentary Dig It, it's about the Brian Jonestown Massacre and the Dandy Warhols and their relationship, and it shows two trajectories that these bands go in, where the Dandy Warhols kind of play into commercial success. They listen to the record label. They're like, we need hits. We need popularity so we can showcase people the rest of our discography and what we're about. The Brian Jonestown Massacre takes a very different approach, kind of spits in the face of every record label, goes deeper into this, like, psychedelic rock, deeper into, like, ambient stuff at certain points and then eventually kind of phases out as it's not really a sustainable model. But little tangent about the first album. The second album is 13 Tales from Urban Bohemia, the one I'm going to be talking about. I think this is the best introduction into the Dandy Warhols because it's like the first album that shows how much they can do and how different the songs can be, how many genres they can include, how long the songs can be, how much of the songs can include very monotonous or sometimes boring aspects, but still create a really fun and really like eclipsing atmosphere. I feel like the thing I love about this album the most is there's like, even when it's toned down, it feels like there's no dead space. It's constant, like constant grunge, constant psychedelic noises. They play on a lot of genres that are kind of maximalist in a way. Before I get into this album a little bit more, I want to talk about some more recent Dandy Warhols projects because I think they're getting into a very cool sound now. Distortland came out in 2016. Why You So Crazy came out in 2019. These albums kind of play with like electronic music a lot more, but also get into soft rock kind of weirdly. They kind of, Distortland especially, kind of goes back and forth between very melodic, kind of like melodramatic soft rock and like electronic music. And Why You So Crazy, I think less soft rock, but pretty experimental. But 13 Tales from Urban Bohemia, this is one of my dad's favorite albums. I first heard this album when I was a child and then heard it a ton more since. I think this is one of those examples of something that I might have never gotten, I probably would have never gotten as into it as I have if it was not so like formative for me and like what I liked about music. A weird theory that I have in my head is that I don't know if I would like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy as much as I do if I didn't like this album.
Really?
Yeah. Because I think like songs like Nietzsche, Godless, Horse Pills are all that kind of like same upbeat, like grunge, distorted beats. I don't really know how to, very maximalist and very distorted, very fast, very energetic. And that's the same thing that I love about My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy at times. And I think Yeezus too. I think, I don't know if I would like Yeezus as much. The big song off this album is Bohemian Like You. It's by far the most pop. It is also, if you really dig into it, like hilarious. It's like a very clear depiction. It's, have you seen the show Portlandia?
Yeah.
It's like a Portlandia sketch as like a song.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, they talk about like the guy, the like whoever the singer is, whoever the author or narrator of this song is.
The lyricist
is like a guy like living on a couch. Like his girlfriend has like a new like boyfriend, or like his ex-girlfriend does, but he still like sleeps on the couch. He's got like he talks a lot about like this like vegan restaurant and stuff, and he can like hook people up. It's hilarious. Some cool detours of this album are songs like Shaken, which is kind of like, and Country Shaken and Country Lover are kind of like folksy, like bluegrass songs. And then you get songs like Muhammad or like Nietzsche, which are like really kind of like ambient at times, very like psychedelic, and very psychedelic. I guess that's the best way to describe them. They're kind of mesmerizing almost. Yeah. Very good album. Something I've listened to a lot. I don't know if there's much else I want to say about it. What were your takes?
I didn't listen to it as much as the album from last week, which is fine because I don't think it's as dense as like what Wiki was talking about. But I thought it was good. I enjoyed most of it. I think it starts really strong. The first three tracks I like a lot. I think there's like two songs where it has a little lull, but then it picks back up, and I appreciated that. I think it's Solid that I didn't like that much.
Yeah.
It's not that it didn't age well, it's just that it feels somewhat unnecessary.
The song Solid?
Yeah.
I think that range, that 5 through 8 range on this album, with the exception of Horse Pills at times for me, because that's a very funny song and a very fast-paced song, but like Solid, Sleep, and Get Off are, I think, a lull in the album.
Yeah, and then it picks right back up. Bohemian Like You is crazy that it has 125 million streams on Spotify. I had no idea.
It was in an advertisement. It was in a Verifone. Is that a thing?
Yes, I think so.
I think it's in a Verifone ad.
Okay.
Yeah.
I liked Shaken a lot. I didn't listen to the second disc. It looked like it's mostly just demos and like leftover tracks.
Yeah. And I think they put Not If You Were the Last Junkie on Earth on it too for some reason.
That's kind of like what they do with Pop Smoke.
Yeah, where they
just put the same song.
They just put the same song on two albums. Yeah.
Rest in peace, Pop Smoke. It's wild that it ends with the gospel.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting there and listening to it, and I was like, why do I know this? Like, are they really ending it with, like, kind of like a hymn in a way? And I was like, huh. And so what I was writing, if I can find my notes somewhere, is there an overarching narrative going on? Is there something in the background that I'm just missing?
To the entire album or to the gospel? The amount of times I've listened to it, I can, I think, confidently say no.
Really?
I think this album is, in the way that, like, the show Atlanta is less of a character-driven plot and more of, like, a showcasing of this, like, lifestyle or place. I think this is just a showcasing of, like, the people in the band, the places they are from, the place that they're recording it, and the people that they hang out with. Because the Dandy Warhols were, like, and still are, known for, like, interacting and getting help from a lot of different artists in a lot of different ways. And they, like, if you know where Slab Town is in Portland, it's like this old kind of funky place in Portland, and they rented out a block of it and just made like a party place, like for themselves, yeah. Basically. Like they just record there and then they like throw parties there. So I think, and a lot of their work, I think, including this album, is just like a very cool reflection of what their lifestyle is like and kind of like their humor and what they talk about. And a lot of the times it's kind of ironic.
Sure.
Like it plays on like this like rough and like kind of granola Portland vibe. I think this album does a great job on reflecting that. It's really like, it's kind of like rough and like, I don't know. I think it's rough and intentionally corny at times.
Yeah.
And I think that's funny. Because I think they know that they're huge Portland people, and then they can like kind of play on it at the same time.
Mm-hmm. They give me like if Neutral Milk Hotel and Sparks had a child.
Yeah.
They give me that kind of vibe.
Yeah, they're like, I feel like they're like Neutral Milk Hotel if Neutral Milk Hotel like listened or like knew all the jokes while they made the album.
Yeah. If like they were self-aware.
Yeah, like, they're super, like, self-aware of, like, how much they play into this, like, very free, very granola. I hate to use the word granola, but I don't really know what works best. Like,
yeah.
DIY Portland thing. I think they know the joke for sure.
They're in on it.
They're very much in on it.
Yeah.
Bohemian Like You, I think, is probably the best example out of every album. I think that song does the best job at it.
I love how it transitions, each song like transitions into the next one.
Mm-hmm.
If an album does that, then I always like Soy Face. I'm like, oh, every time, it doesn't matter.
One more thing that I wanted to mention that I forgot to mention when I was just going over the album, but I think ties back into this Portland thing. The songs Nietzsche and Muhammad, I think, are also two really good examples of like the stereotype of Portland people, like, getting really into obscure intellectualism.
Yeah.
Like, like Muhammad, like a bunch of people, like a bunch of white people in Portland, like becoming like Muslim or something.
Yeah.
Or like a bunch of white people in Portland, like quoting Nietzsche a bunch.
Yeah.
Like, I think those songs are pieces of art that can live on their own without it. But I think those are good examples of them, like, kind of being self-aware about this, this like self-confident intellectualism that they kind of promote in their music or kind of showcase.
And that kind of makes sense with the title itself. They're each tales, but they're interweaving in each other. They're like with the transitions, it's not that all of these different, like this search for a higher power or nihilism, it's not like these are in different like areas of the city. It's all within the city.
Yeah.
And that's why they're transitioning into each other, is yeah. that it's all flowing in the same environment, but they're just different tales.
I think that's a great point because, yeah, I think, and that's something I don't realize a lot about the album and something I don't necessarily think about the album a lot, but it does all flow together and it does all make sense together to an extent. Back to what you were saying earlier, I don't know if there's a clear narrative that you can find in the lyrics or really describe in the instrumentals of it, but it makes sense together for some reason. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think the title of it is great.
Yeah, it cues you in.
Yeah.
To what's about to happen, what you're about to listen to.
It is very urban in the way that that word is actually supposed to be used. 13 Tales.
13 Tales.
Urban Bohemia.
If you could recommend any songs, if you could recommend three songs.
The three songs you should listen to off 13 Tales from Urban Bohemia by the Dandy Warhols are Bohemia Like You. I think it is the best reflection of the album as a whole, what they're going for. And it's the single. And I think when artists put out singles, it's intentional. It is the first thing that they want you to listen to. So I like to kind of respect that in a way. The second would be Horse Pills. Probably my personal favorite when I'm in the mood for it. It's very fast, very fun. Third one, Godless. I love that song. Nothing much else to say. I love Godless.
Godless is good. It's a great opener.
I love how the first three tracks are Godless, Muhammad, and then Nietzsche. It's like whiplash right away. Yeah, 13 Tales from Urban Bohemia. If you listen to it, my dad, Jeff, is going to be so happy. So he's like, all he wants to do is put people onto this band. I swear, like, I was like 6 years old when I heard this for the first time. And he would just sit there and be like, isn't it so good? He talks about Courtney Taylor Taylor opening like this wine bar a ton.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like never been to it. He just like talks about how much he likes that he did that.
We should all go.
Yeah.
We should get together. Do you think he actively like shows up to his own wine? Like is it a bar or is it just...
Oh, it's a bar. I was reading about it, and he describes himself as, like, a huge wino. So I think he, like, actually goes there and gets drunk a lot. But it's in the same... So they rented out this block, like I said, and they have, like, a party space and, like, a studio. And then, like, across the street is, like, this bar that he owns. So I think he just, like, records, gets drunk, and then goes and parties.
That's amazing. That's the life.
He's, like, probably, like, 45, 50, so... Yeah. Living that Portland lifestyle, I suppose, to its maximum. Moto Mommy?
I guess let's get into Moto Mommy. Before I jump into background and info, this is Rosalia saying, I'm gonna do whatever I want, which I'd love. So, Rosalia is a pop star. Not gonna go too much into her own background because she's incredible. Just go listen to her. This is her third solo album after Los Angeles and El Mal Querer. The latter is a concept album. It's based on a 13th century I would call it Tale. It's fascinating. If you have an hour or so, sit down and listen to it. There's also a visual component. I think there's music videos, or at least there's music videos for most, if not all, of the tracks, and the ones that don't have specific art tailored toward it. So you can just go on YouTube and listen to the whole thing through a playlist. It's I think Rolling Stone put it in their updated top 500 albums of all time, which is crazy for someone who's just been on the map for less than 5 years or so.
Wow.
Yeah. But diving more into Motomami itself, the album is separated into two parts. Moto being divine, experimental, like strong, gritty. And Mami being this genuine, vulnerable side, more personal. In a Rolling Stone interview, Rosalía described it as a feminist counterbalance to misogyny in music. It's maximalist. There's elements of jazz, flamenco, rap. It's kind of rooted in reggaeton. There's mixes of synthesizers, pianos, heavy-hitting drums. There's also, like, an element of... It's one outlet. I can't remember what it is. I'll look it up later and probably include in the description or something. Describe some of the songs as cyberpunk-like, which is fascinating. Right now, it has a 94 on Metacritic, as it's the highest-rated album of the year so far. It's fun, it's exciting, it's often gorgeous, and it's without a doubt groundbreaking. While not all of the ideas necessarily stick or connect for everyone, the risks she takes as a relatively new pop artist are incredible. Her voice is beautiful, the production is game-changing, and it's not, the producers aren't unknown, like, they're not unknown, like Pharrell is on it at one point, and James Blake is on it at one point, but it's this constant battle between appearing strong for the public while trying to remain personal and trying not to lose yourself. And the last track on the album, Sakura, is about the cherry blossoms, which connects to our own campus. While they might be gone, that's kind of the point of the song, where Rosalía says that it's a flower that she loves and that she finds very beautiful, but it lasts very little. And sometimes situations in life feel like that. She said that with El País. And that's a common theme throughout the whole thing. As I said, it's a battle between trying to stay relevant and trying to keep yourself. And, you know, yes, it is critically acclaimed, but there is valid criticism that the songs aren't fleshed out enough. But going back to talking about what we said about Kendrick and Talib Kweli, it's an artist's choice to let the songs run its course. And if a song is ending, it's ending, and you just let it lie, which makes it very bold and unforgiving. And I was watching reaction videos this morning, because that's one of my, like, guilty pleasures, is to just watch people react to albums. And there's these two guys sitting and talking about it, and the album ends abruptly. I just kind of, like, the last song has its moment, she does what she needs to do, and then just pulls out. And they said, it just ends? The reactors were just, like, completely stunned that it just, like, stopped. And I thought, yeah, it just ends. She doesn't owe you anything. Like, she's making what she wants to make, and I think that's brilliant. How I found the album? I've been a fan for a while. Not since her debut, but especially since her second release. There's a song on there that's, I don't know if it's an interpolation or if it's a direct cover of Justin Timberlake's Cry Me a River, but it surpasses whatever Justin Timberlake did, because she has such a beautiful voice, and you can feel the emotion within every single line. And this album came out on the same day as Charli XCX's Crash, which was super disappointing, but I followed it up with this, and my mind was just blown. And just the piano jazz break in the first track, I was solid. I was like, okay, I don't need Charli anymore. I'm okay. We can get into the individual tracks later, but for now, what were your thoughts?
Incredible overall.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. I think that summarizes everything I'm going to say about it, is that I'm a fan now. Because I wasn't before. I didn't really know her. I feel really out of the loop after listening to this. Like, I consider myself pretty knowledgeable about the ongoings of music, but definitely feel like kind of a dummy after not after not knowing about this. I really was excited by the faster paced songs on this album. I think it's just the mood I'm in the spring. I usually listen to more upbeat music, but I think part of it was also the more raw emotional ones, with less drums, with less instrumental substance, are hard to listen to, even if you don't know Spanish. For some reason, very hard to listen to. So those were ones I would have to, like, I went on a walk to Ravenna Park this morning and, like, just kind of prioritized all those types. Like, I think Hentai was the first one I listened to. And just tried to, like, really push those into my head, because I think for me right now they were less easily accessible, but once I was able to get into them, saw a lot of beauty and a lot of emotion behind her voice that aren't as outright or expressively clear in some of the other tracks. But one thing I wanted to mention about Sayoko, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, god damn, this song ended early. Like, yeah. I know it's an artistic choice and I respect her, and I think in a way, maybe she wants me to be pissed off about it a little bit. So I respect that. But oh my god, I loved this song.
Yeah.
Like, albums where the first song, like, just floors you are so fun. And this song floored me. And then I think the next song that I had a similar reaction to was Motomami and then Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
And the time I got to Diablo, I very clearly remember going, goddamn, the drums on this thing are good. Like, yeah. All the time. The drums are perfect. Especially on the song Diablo, how they don't, like, you get the idea that it might be another very slow, very emotional song, and then it turns into this kind of,
it's like ethereal.
Yeah. With also, like, kind of reggaeton drums, if I'm remembering correctly, on Diablo, which is amazing. I don't remember. What's this? Is Diablo the song that James Blake is on? Okay, because I was like, that's James Blake, but he was never featured, so I wasn't sure. But yeah, and the song with The Weeknd is good, but I've never seen The Weeknd get showed up this much.
I know.
Like, it made The Weeknd look like an up-and-coming artist. Damn. I was honestly surprised. I get why he got himself on this album and, like, is okay with taking a backseat. I think he understands how good she is. And I'm glad he does. Like, that song is good because I think if a lot of other artists got The Weeknd as a feature, they would be like, here's The Weeknd. And then, like, the last 30 seconds is, like, them doing something.
Yeah.
But she's like, nah, The Weeknd's on my album. The Weeknd's on Motomami. It's not his song.
And the audacity, the just, like, having him be on there and saying, no, you need to sing in Spanish.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. And I'm sure he would have been like, of course.
Yeah.
Like, if Rosalía wants you on a song, you say yes. Because she just has, it's similar to Keem, and I want to talk about Keem later, where there's so much talent in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just waiting to see.
It, in the best way possible, feels like effortless at times.
Yeah.
For her. And I think that especially plays into what you were saying with how the songs end, how the songs transition, how the songs are introduced. It feels like she could, like a song like Moto Mami could be 4 minutes if you want it to be, but it's a minute and 1 second. I think that very much plays into the idea that she knows how good she is, and she is like making very clear and distinctive artistic choices. It doesn't feel like an album like a lot of like Gucci Mane projects where it's like 4 minutes and he's like, this could be 2 minutes, this could be 4 minutes, this could be 6 minutes, I don't give a fuck, you know, which is a different style, a different thing on its own, but every second feels calculated, which very much makes it seem like she can do pretty much whatever she wants. If you can calculate that time so perfectly and fill it so perfectly, the sky seems like really the limit there.
Yeah, and it also plays into the theme of how much time you have in the limelight, like the 15 minutes of fame kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you could make an argument that she's doing it for streaming. I don't think it's that at all. But, I mean, there's cynics. There's always going to be critics saying that, oh, the shorter the song, the more streams you can get. But I don't think she would do that.
Yeah. I also think, you know, a lot of people are very critical of that, but there, in my personal opinion, I don't feel like there's anything wrong with moving with how music culture is going. I think Earl Sweatshirt is a really good example of that, of putting together very short songs that are very impactful and meaningful. And sure, that plays into streaming, and sure, the average attention span for music listeners right now is probably the lowest it's ever been. So you're going to get more accessible by doing that, but if you listen to Earl Sweatshirt's music, it's not accessible for a lot of people. It's short, but, you know, there's twists, there's turns, there's...
There's East.
There's East. Yeah, I was literally just thinking of the name of that song. Yeah, there's East. And it feels like she's doing the same thing, possibly at a higher level, too.
Mm-hmm.
With how much she can fill in really short amounts of time.
Supposedly, they mastered the whole album for, like, I want to say I read 9 months.
Wow.
So there is a sense that this is what she wanted. This isn't like I'm staying in a stadium for 2 weeks to just cram an album together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I love this album. It's, and I have no problem with short albums. Like, if something has, like, if you can make something brief, concise, and it's quality, I'm not going to be mad.
Yeah.
Some of the favorite songs, Saoko, the opening track, Bizcochito, Cute.
Yeah.
Is great, and probably my favorite song is Hentai. I love Hentai. I am aware that saying I love hentai sounds weird.
Yeah.
But it's so good.
That's going to be the audio clip they get you on.
I love hentai.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And if you dig deeper and like look at the whole like over-sexualization aspect to it, naming it hentai makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so sad. And the like big build up to that climax at the end, it just like, it gives me the like an Arca vibe. I don't know if you're like super big into Arca.
Fairly familiar.
Yeah, it's just like wild drums. I implore listeners to go listen to it, because it's only like, it's less than 3 minutes. Just take some time. There's a music video too, if you really want to watch it instead of listening to it. You can just do that. But it's this beautiful climax after this soft, heart-wrenching performance. And it just ends with her saying, hentai? And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite moments in music of 2022. But, I mean, there's a different album which I think is incredible, which... I don't know if you've heard it yet, but maybe.
What is the album?
Black Country New Road.
Oh, I've heard of it. I haven't listened to it
yet. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. That album's incredible. We're not talking about that right now. But no, I love hentai.
A question that I had that I just thought of, but also plays into what you were talking about earlier about how this album was described as cyberpunk. From the jump, you can kind of, even from the album cover, you can kind of see that there's a lot of electronic elements to this album. There's a lot of elements that feel, I mean, electronic music is the best music that can make things feel otherworldly, kind of non-human, plays on what it means to be an artist and sing. I wanted to ask you a question about that, a little bit with the over-sexualization. I think there's been like a lot of research done. Music research is kind of iffy to me, how much you can really dig into what people mean when they don't expressively say it. But there's been a lot of people talking about how electronic music is possibly the best genre that plays on ideas of sexuality and gender, and the best genre right now for morphing or distorting or altering notions about both of those ideas and concepts. Do you think that is at play in this? And how do you think it compares to work that Sophie, for example, has done, where they are quite possibly one of the most outright artists in playing on those ideas through electronic music? Do you think that this album is similar? Do you think that it does kind of similar things?
I think it definitely attempts to. I would say there's other artists in the genre that do it better. I mean, Arca just dropped 4 albums last year. And she... I don't know how to describe it, but electronic music, it feels very innate. And there's a normal band, a guitar, drums, a bass, singers can only go so far. In electronic music, you can bend sound, you can break sound, you can make things clip and then come back and make it sound normal. There's so much room for creativity and expression, which you don't get from just a normal band. Of course, you can. And that usually comes through lyricism and the way the instruments are played, but you don't have that freedom of what a computer provides, which you're like removing the human aspect. You're not like really playing anything, but if you're taking it away and putting it into something else and having more opportunities,
mm-hmm.
and you can make sounds sound like emotions. There's a lot of songs on this, and especially on Sophie's work, where songs sound like bubblegum. They sound poppy. They sound like happy. They sound... It's hard to describe. It's not pure happiness, but it's... I don't know.
It's quite possibly the hardest genre to describe.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things I love about it, especially in relation to the ideas of playing on gender and playing on sexuality and those concepts, is that there are a lot of other things. Almost everything in music can become gendered to a point. I mean, I think, do you know, what's their name? It's like Badu B, Bidu Ba. You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
They have a song called She Plays Bass, which is something I think about a lot in terms of how music can become gendered. I think just the notion she plays bass, the fact that that has to be said, like bass is like a male-dominated instrument, is crazy. Like, it's just a guitar, but, like almost everything else in this world, it's become gendered. But I think that is so hard to do with a computer, and especially when you can alter your voice in so many different ways.
Yeah.
I think that does such a good job on erasing these preconceived notions. Yeah. I mean, when you get a lead singer that's female, a lot of people think it's going to be singer-songwriter stuff. A lot of people think it's going to be Taylor Swift.
Alternative.
Yeah, or like, indie.
singing about a heartbreak, which makes a band like Hole so good, you know? Say as much as you want about if Kurt Cobain wrote songs for Courtney Love, I think you're kind of a, I think that's kind of a dumb take anyways, but that band, I think, ties into what you were saying, where some bands can break those ideas. And I think Hole did a great job of that, but electronic music especially, they're just, I think by the fact that it is also just so new right now and is something that you cannot really look back at for too long, something that cannot be traced too far in the past, too deeply entrenched in a lot of like structures, a lot of societal structures, I think it makes it one of the best genres for experimenting with so many new and like innovative ideas about what it means to be an artist, what it means to be a person. But like, I think electronic music, not to get too far on a tangent, but I think it's probably one of the most, if not the most exciting genre for me right now.
Yeah.
Where I look to it and I'm like, I'm so excited to see what comes out of this. As much as it's not even my favorite genre, but goddamn, like, so much that comes out of that genre is just stuff I've never, ever heard before or never, or can't go back and be like, this sounds like this.
Yeah. Two thoughts on it. One, electronic music is so crazy because it's evolving so fast that one day you'll be like, I've never heard this before. And then a few days later, that sound is everywhere. And then and a few days after that, it's another, I've never heard this before. Mm-hmm. It's just this continuous cycle of innovation. And my second thought is that electronic music goes back into the 1900s a bit, and it pisses me off when people like praise deadmau5 or Skrillex when the pioneers of electronic music were women.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was that located primarily?
It was all over. I mean, because music is just, ideas are forming in people's minds no matter where. But do you know, forget her name, and I feel bad because of that, because they're being pushed out of history, all these pioneers in electronic music. She sampled in a Danny Brown song, and if I can think of it, we can play like a little piece here. But it's, I think When It Rains, it's like, do-do-do-do, kind of thing. That's a woman. And it's all these like weird toxic men that were like blown up with dubstep, they don't deserve it.
No. And dubstep honestly might have been the darkest era. I think like there's certain aspects of it I like, and there's certain aspects of it that I think made electronic, and I think I should preface all of this by saying I'm like kind of recent into it. I don't know if I was ever really into it in high school. I think it's something I picked up largely in college, but I never liked dubstep that much. I think it's influential to an extent, but it does not portray the same emotion and same like connection you can feel to an artist or feel to a piece of work that a lot of the electronic music I hear now does and can produce. But it's especially refreshing to see artists like Sophie, or you know, the minimal extent I've listened to Arca, this Rosalia album, to see people that would be largely pushed out of electronic music and that dubstep era come back and produce work that I think is better. Yeah. And produce work that I think is more easily able to connect people, more easily able to connect people to the work as well.
I agree. If I could pick three songs that you should definitely listen to from Motomami, I would pick, I'll pick one fun one, one sad one, not sad, slow, and one experimental one. I'd pick for fun one, Chicken Teriyaki. Then I'd pick for a slower one, Hentai. And then finally, for more experimental one, not too experimental, I would recommend Cute, but I'm going to go with Diablo. And those are my picks. those are my thoughts on Motomami, my second favorite album of the year so far.
It's going to be up there for me. At the end of the year, I think this album will be in that conversation. Because I'm a big, like, ranker, you know? Like, I love ranking stuff.
Yeah.
I have favorites of everything, so.
Like tier lists.
Tier lists. Love that shit.
Love tier lists.
Yeah.
Well, I think we can wrap it. If you enjoyed it, check back in next Tuesday for a brand new episode of Vinyl Rats.
Motomami by Rosalia. 13 Tales from Urban Bohemia by the Dandy Warhols. Two very good albums. Please listen to them. It would make us so happy.
It would. If you have questions, comments, concerns, feedback, please email the podcast team. And you can find us on our socials.
Don't email with concerns. We don't care. I don't know what concerns you'd have, but I don't care.
If you want us to cover a certain album, send it to us. We'd love to hear it. Even if it's your own work, we love to highlight local artists. Thanks for listening. We hope to see you next week.